This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lin Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Noel Lim. Now it's 7:37 in the morning, Tuesday, the 28th of January, which means that in about half an hour, we're going to be having the breakfast grill where Xiaoning, you'll be speaking with Alex Yao, the group CEO of Tropicana Corp.
Yeah, well, I think we all know that for 2019, the property market was extremely challenging. But the question in this new decade, you know, have things changed? So I'll be speaking to their CEO, Alex, the group CEO, and I'm going to find out how they're doing, whether the worst is over. And if you wanted to buy a property, would it be theirs?
All right, so be sure to stay tuned for that conversation later on after the 8 o'clock news if you're interested in hearing from Tropicana Corp. But right now, we are taking a look at some international headlines, specifically what's been happening in the International Court of Justice, because we've been following developments of the International Court case against the Myanmar government for allegations of genocide against the Rohingya community. So last week, the ICJ ruled that Myanmar must stop alleged genocidal acts against Rohingya Muslims and preserve evidence of previous possible crimes by the country's military.
Yeah, so it sounds good on paper, but I'm not sure in reality whether that would really happen. So this ICJ ruling is really an application in a genocide case that was brought by the West African nation, Gambia, for provisional measures to order Myanmar to cease alleged abuses.
So we discussed the case when it first went to the ICJ last month, and you can listen to that podcast by looking up the title, Aung San Suu Kyi Defending Genocide. So for a better understanding of what this court decision means, we have on the line Hunter Marston, PhD candidate and researcher at the Australian National University. Thank you for joining us this morning, Hunter. So could you explain the ICJ's decision? What is it specifically calling on Myanmar to do? And is this, at the end of the day, binding?
Hi, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on the show. So the ICJ ruled on several immediate provisional measures, among those guaranteeing the safety of Rohingya living in Myanmar and preventing security and military forces from committing acts of genocide. It also ruled that the Myanmar government should not destroy any evidence of genocidal acts committed. However, these rulings were preliminary and provisional measures, so a final ruling on genocide has not yet come.
So really, how significant is this decision given that the ICJ has no enforcement powers?
Right. I think that's important to note that the ICJ doesn't have enforcement power. For instance, the ICJ lacks jurisdiction to bring charges against specific individuals here. However, its findings will all be passed before or sent on to the UN Security Council, which is significant in itself. Moreover, I think the international recognition of the legal body is significant. So it has a reputational power to sort of shame and influence behavior of the government, even if it's really doubled down on Aung San Suu Kyi's defense of the Myanmar military at The Hague. I think the presence of this ruling will be felt on the international stage, and certainly there will be more international scrutiny on what Myanmar does following the ruling.
And Hunter, how is the Myanmar government reacting to the ruling, and what are the next steps they're expected to take?
Well, the Myanmar government has rather predictably rejected the court's findings, and it seems like it was pretty organized in its own sort of PR ahead of time. Aung San Suu Kyi published an op-ed in the Financial Times last week pointing to Myanmar government's Independent Commission of Inquiry report in the effort to try to show that Myanmar government is able to pursue their own independent justice within the country, independent of international courts. And that the government has rejected, in a statement, the court's findings roundly. As for next steps, I think that remains uncertain. Right now, Aung San Suu Kyi seems content to sit on the ICOE report, and the government will continue to sort of stall by saying it's laid the groundwork for safe return and repatriation of Rohingya and Rakhine State. So far, we have not seen real credible evidence that the country has prepared safe conditions for their return, however.
Now, Hunter, what about Myanmar's external relations? How is this case going to affect them, particularly with names like China, the U.S., as well as ASEAN?
Right. Good question. I don't think it will be a major turning point in Myanmar's relations with any of these countries. Rather, I think it sort of cements the trends we've already seen, Xi Jinping just visited Myanmar the other week and really set relations on a firm ground, signing a number of memoranda on economic and investment infrastructure projects in the country. So Myanmar has really grown closer to China again under the NLD government. At the same time, Myanmar's government and people feel resentful of the EU and US criticism of its government and military's behavior over what it sees as internal security issues in Rakhine State. So I think this rift between the West and Myanmar will only deepen, but I don't think it's causally linked to this ICJ ruling in particular.
All right, and thank you very much for your speaking with us this morning, Hunter. That was Hunter Marston, PhD candidate and researcher at the Australian National University, talking to us about the recent ICJ ruling on Myanmar. Now, this is a bit of a quandary, right? Because the ICJ, as we discussed with Hunter, doesn't have any enforcement power. So, as he put it, really the only way the ICJ has any kind of effect is to shame countries into complying with its rulings. But the question is how this is not exactly the most consistent or reliable measure of any kind of response from the countries involved.
I think it's just water off a duck's back, right? So I shame you and then so what? You know, it doesn't really make a difference. I mean, not to say that, maybe some countries take it more seriously than others, but for the case of Myanmar, this genocide has been going on for decades, right? Alleged genocide has been going on for a very long time. There have been many critics against this, but yet nothing seems to be have done. So I think, okay, so they go to ICJ. And what's amazing is Aung San Suu Kyi turned up, right, to defend her country as if it didn't matter, you know, and despite the wealth of evidence. And now there's a ruling, which was not surprising. I don't think they're really going to do very much, sadly.
Yeah, I don't think you can hide the evidence. I think since the crackdown by the army in 2017, more than 700,000 people have fled to Bangladesh. So, you know, you can't hide those numbers. And so I think Aung San Suu Kyi's reputation has certainly taken a hit, but she seems, still stuck on this report that her government had done by the ICOE. And it found that war crimes had been committed, but there was no evidence of genocide. In Malaysia, there are many refugees who have come here. I think about 100,000.
178,000.
Yeah, 178,000 in total refugees, but I think 100,000 are Rohingyas. So, again, why would people leave their homes if it's if the conditions are all right?
Yeah, so this is one of the things that I think it once again comes back to mistrust, right? Because a lot of the people who have been making the most noise about the crisis in Rakhine have been independent organizations who are perceived to have links to the US, and that as a result, they have been accused, like Human Rights Watch, for example, has been accused of being a US government vehicle. And all of that. The problem, of course, is that there is no one really that you can trust in situations like these. You certainly cannot trust whatever the Myanmar government says, because the Myanmar government has an obvious vested interest in saying that, nope, no genocide happening here. Who are we supposed to believe? A report that has been put out by a government that has have an interest in protecting their own name and status, or independent organizations who may have some kind of hidden agenda? And I say may here with a healthy pinch of salt. But the important thing for me to note coming out of that call, that discussion with Hunter, was the relations with China, because Myanmar is a small country, and they have given indications to say that if Western countries impose sanctions on them, that it's really just going to push them closer towards the Eastern superpower, China, because they've already seen that, hey, you know, relations with the Xi Jinping government haven't really suffered, even with this Myanmar ICJ case going on. So they have a fallback.
Yeah, I mean, and the Myanmar economy has been in the doldrums the last 2-3 years, right? We do know that they're suffering from inflation. There's also been a lack of economic activity. So clearly they need to cozy up with the Chinese government. And the Belt Road initiatives are a lot to do with that. That's going to be their next engine of growth for Myanmar.
But certainly Myanmar cannot afford another round of economic sanctions, right, if it's from the US. But, you know, when we talk about political links refugee cages. UNHCR in Malaysia, for example, they are not wanting to, refugees from Rohingya refugees to be returned to Myanmar because it's just not safe for them.
The question I have is, what do we do with all these children who are here, right? I think there's as many as 40,000+ Rohingya children who, unfortunately for Malaysia, don't have access to education. And, you know, there doesn't seem to be any resolution in sight on this matter.
Yeah, you know, under the Trump administration, they have not been able to be moved to the US as well. But the thing is, they can actually study in foreign universities like Monash and Nottingham if they get a scholarship.
But that's a very big if they do get that scholarship. So it's a situation that does directly affect us here in Malaysia. So we'll be watching it very closely. But right now we're heading into a few messages. And after the break, we're turning our attention to digital banks. Is Malaysia ready for them? We're going to be discussing this with Tama Febrian of Fitch Ratings. And if you haven't voted on the poll we have running on the BFM Twitter account, we're asking you, do you check the source of information before forwarding reports on the Wuhan coronavirus? Be sure to let us know what you think and stay tuned for more conversation after this, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.